Hello and welcome to Getting It Down, capturing the moment of creativity. I'm your host, Andy Gordon, and in this podcast I chat with creative people and ask the questions, what is creativity? How do you be creative? And how do you help people express that creativity? These are questions that might be hard to put your finger on, but when you do, you can feel the pulse. So sit back, make yourself comfortable, and listen in. In this episode of Getting It Down, we're in the home office of Nat Harker, publicist, event producer, web designer, and creative thinker. Thanks very much for having me at your place.
Oh, you're very welcome.
How did you begin this creative journey that you're on?
I was right into theatre as a kid growing up. I was very lucky that a local theatre teacher on the Gold Coast noticed that I was a bit strange and thought I should come in and join her theatre group. And from there, signed up to university in a creative arts degree. Wow. And the rest is a lot of debaucherous, arty history.
When you were drawn into that theatre world when you were younger, was that acting or was...
Yeah, performing.
Right. How did you enjoy that?
I loved it. Yeah, I'm actually quite shy and was especially when I was a kid, but there was something that happened to me, like everyone says, when I got on stage. I just felt amazing. And right. It was something I was good at.
Yeah.
You know? Right. And it was exciting to be good at something.
Right. And then the transition to university, did that work well for you? Were you enjoying that study and then digging in deeper?
Oh, it made me who I am.
Yeah, right. Wow.
I lived in a crazy art share house, classic.
And are we in Brisbane then or in Sydney?
Oh, we're on the Gold Coast.
Oh,
so
wow.
We were kind of against the system in so many ways, in a plastic, fantastic world.
Yeah.
And this great group of people that were fighting against that kind of regime in the town. And, you know, the Gold Coast is actually from that university, Griffith University, and the arts faculty there have a really thriving creative industries down on the coast.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Wow. Wow. Were you performing then?
Yeah, so I performed probably up to my second year in the Bachelor of Arts, and then I just started doing more and more backstage kind of work, working on flyers for the shows or building websites and things like that for the shows. And slowly but surely, by my third year, I tried to do honours, but I was a terrible academic. But I did put on a festival at the university called Rainbow Day, celebrating diversity. And that was kind of the beginning of my thirst for festivals.
Right. Wow. Even then. Now, the transition from front of stage to backstage, was that something that you kind of actively did or did you sort of drift into it?
I think the course that we did, the creative arts there, was a very open platform university, and the lecturers there, Michael Foster and the head of the School of Arts, Patricia Wise, were very into cross-discipline.
Right.
So we always worked with the visual artists and the writers and the filmmakers. Everything was just a big old mishmash, which made for better parties as well.
Mm.
But it wasn't like you strictly sat down and did Shakespeare for the first 6 months. You worked with the film guys interweaving into your play or things like that. So you kind of, everybody became a bit of a bitzer because of that platform. So, yeah, I guess it was a survival thing as well. You know, the only way you can get it done is if you do a little bit of everything.
Mm.
So that's where it kind of came out of.
And I guess that gives you, at that age and at that stage in your career, a much greater understanding of the mechanics of putting something on and achieving something. Is that fair?
Yeah. And I also, too, I had computer skills. Right. My dad was a computer guy, and I'd grown up with a lot of computer stuff around me, so I always knew a little bit of computer stuff that maybe other people didn't know, and I was able to
use that skill.
Use that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so the first festival, tell us a bit more about that.
Oh, Rainbow Day.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so special to my heart.
Really?
Yeah. Because, the university was run by a guild as opposed to a student union.
Right.
And it began as a teachers' college, Griffith Uni on the coast, and the entire art school has pretty much been decimated now. It's totally been defunded. There's no theatre there anymore. Mm. It's an absolute tragedy. But we did Rainbow Day as trying to bring a bit of acceptance and understanding that maybe wasn't there across the other faculties.
So it was fairly conservative?
Yeah. Yeah, lots of sport.
Right.
There was a lot of us and them, and our theatre was actually like underneath the pub. So, you know, we were kind of these weird ones that...
Subterranean creatures.
That lived underneath, you know, and every now and then we'd come up and entertain them and then go back down to our dungeon.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It was fun.
Wow. How many people were doing the course?
Oh, it was only small, wasn't it? I mean, the whole... School of Arts was probably under 500.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was only little.
Mm.
But it was family,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so did Rainbow Day achieve its objective? Did you get people from the other faculties to come along and engage?
Yeah, I think so. And the best part was it did continue once I left uni, which was really lovely.
Yeah.
A few friends stayed on and actually finished their honours. And they kept it going, which was really lovely.
Right, right. Yeah. And so what took you away from uni and finishing honours? What did you go on to?
I got a job, surprisingly. My friend and I, we actually swapped jobs. So she came home and said, oh, there's this, like, admin database job. I think you'd be better at it. And I'd sort of possibly lined up some work at the university. So she ended up taking the university job and actually ended up lecturing and being a genius and all those things. And I went off and did this database entry job, which actually ended up being a talent agent for an acting agency in Brisbane that then moved their office to the Gold Coast. And then they picked me up to go work in the Sydney office. And that's when I started my Sydney adventure.
Okay. Okay. And database entry, was that just scratching an itch for, at least I can do this to get some work, or was it vibrant?
It was beyond vibrant.
Oh.
It was actually a really creative job, and it taught me about artist management, so how to talk to artists, how to deal with their ups and downs.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to call myself a professional ego masseuse. So, you know, that I think I worked with them for like 4 or 5 years, I think. I can't really remember. But, yeah, it definitely taught me to understand how artists work, how they think, how they are often late, things like that, and understanding the advertising world as well, you know, and starting to understand the film industry and things like that. It was an amazing... launchpad for me out of there. It was awesome.
Wow. Explain a bit more about the creative element of it. What really fired you in that regard?
You had to think outside the box a lot when you're being a casting agent. So you will get the brief of, you know, we want a blonde girl next door, but you might say, look, I'm going to send Bruce, who's, you know, 5'5", not the girl next door, and send it through to the casting director and see what they think. And sometimes you would get it, you know, if you could think of something that was a little out of the box, then you would get noticed, you know, if you had some great ideas and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Wow, that's exciting. When we talk about the arts industry and arts workers, seems to me like because of COVID, probably the general population has a better understanding of what that actually means these days. Do you think that might be the case, or do you think there's still a lot of unawareness in the general public of what goes on behind the scenes?
I think so. I think it's still, even when it was slapped in people's faces, that the value is not there.
Yeah.
That people think that TV shows, live concerts,
festivals,
albums, that they all just appear.
Yeah.
You know, that there isn't value in it, you know. Yeah. And especially now that people are, setting up these house concerts on Zoom and everything and think it's been given to them for free, mm-hmm. you know, and then, I have to pay for that. I would like to see a lot more value on that. And you would think that this would be the moment that people would, especially the government, would see the value, but they don't.
Mm. It's interesting also that you just touched on that there. I'm not sure that unless the artist finds a way to engage with their fans in a monetary sense, that, as you say, people are quite happy to just tune in and watch it for free.
Yeah.
And they don't see that's an anomaly or a contradiction, or how can someone exist on nothing, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, of course, you can go back to Napster and when music began to become available online and everyone just got music for free all of a sudden, you didn't have to buy music anymore, and how, you know, that really changed the face of music. This COVID now is changing a number of other arts elements, isn't it, like theatre and...
Absolutely. And yeah. I mean, what we saw in music, that the value moved from the actual product of buying the album and live shows had this massive resurgence.
Mm.
So you saw bands that were happily living on their royalties go, our royalties are gone.
Yeah.
We've got to hit the road.
Yeah, right, yep.
And so now they've lost that income as well.
Yeah.
So where is the value now?
Mm.
I don't know.
Mm. What is the solution?
I have no idea. If I knew, I'd be onto it. But, the live scene is going to have to totally rethink completely.
Mm. I wonder how we take this into a smaller world with less people in rooms and less people at festivals.
But does that lose the magic, you know?
Wow, yeah.
Is anyone going to be able to mosh again? I mean, I just... You see, is it the same experience when they're in those little, 10x10 cages with only 10 people in? Like, part of the experience of music is experiencing it with other people.
Mm.
So, I'm confused, and I don't know how to feel about a COVID-safe festival. I've heard that there's been some around, but, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to move forward with it.
I'm seeing on the internet... there's an artist that I like, Billy Strings, and he seems to be playing essentially a drive-in tour in the States.
Mm.
And so he's posting these events where they stream live and you can subscribe and pay for it, but the audience is everybody reversed up in their cars like a drive-in with a picnic table, and they can dance in their own little space in front of themselves, and it kind of looks like it's working. As to whether it can go on year after year, I don't know.
I don't understand how it can be viable for the promoters.
No, no.
And then, in turn for everybody else, how is that economically sustainable for everyone?
Yeah, because I guess by the time you get to a big stage and big production and advertising and crew and... that starts getting very expensive, doesn't it?
It sure does.
Mm. Mm.
If you behind the scenes of a major festival is like, it's another world.
Mm.
It's so huge, and there's so many people involved, and there's just so many people out of work. You know,
yes.
At the moment, it's an absolute tragedy.
Yeah. Do you happen to know what the percentage would be like on a ticket sale price at a festival?
No idea.
How that would split up?
No idea.
Oh, it'd be fascinating to look at that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because I imagine that an awful lot of it goes to The mechanics of it.
Well, and now what's going to go to insurance?
Oh, yes.
You know, because a few of the major Australian festivals were lucky that they had old insurance policies that actually meant that they were able to cancel and they were covered.
Right.
But many of the new policies aren't covered for things like a pandemic.
Right.
So they lose money. So, you know, there's going to be... new insurance policies that are going to be huge that have to cover now
every eventuality.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, because I guess even right up to the point, particularly if you're dealing with interstate or international people, you know, right at the point where they're about to get on their plane to get there and you enter a new lockdown or something,
it's such an uncertain future.
Remarkable. You've worked with a number of promoters, but Gaynor, what was it like working with her? What did you learn? What was her approach?
Everything.
Really?
Yeah, she's incredible. I think I was drawn to her because she is so passionate about what she works with.
Right.
She works with music that she loves.
Right. For someone listening, sorry to interrupt, this is Gaynor Crawford, isn't it? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, and she calls herself Gaynor Crawford, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's her name.
Yeah. But her company's called
yes.
that too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, she has a love of folk music.
Right.
She's worked with a lot of great Irish musicians coming out and Americans as well. She just works on what she loves and she's very passionate about music. So I've been very blessed to be around her and learn from her. And she works with such grace, which is so lovely, you know, and a positive person to be around.
Yeah, right.
You know, and right. in a hard and fast world that it can sometimes be, you know, it was really beautiful to work with her, and she has, really nurtured me over the last 10 years working with her, and
right.
she's allowed me to, learn my place in her company and how we can work together. And unfortunately, at the moment, we're on a bit of a hiatus.
Of course.
And I hope we can get back to where we were, but certainly at the moment, we're not bringing in any overseas artists. So.
Yeah.
I hope all that work we've done isn't on hold for a long time.
Mm.
I hope we get to... Mm. We miss each other.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you still keep in contact?
Yeah, absolutely.
I bet she's taking this hard too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she... It's awful. It's really awful.
Would there be lots of mouths to feed in her organisation as well?
It's me and her.
Oh, wow. Right.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Gosh.
And an amazing tour manager who comes on board for the tours and everything. So, yeah.
Mm.
She's a powerhouse.
Yeah, right.
She's an incredible...
Sounds very hands-on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A to Z. And, you know, that's... she's amazing too, because technology's moving so fast and everything. Mm. You know, and she still picks up the phone.
Right.
And I think so many people now, you know, just write the email. And
right. Must have a different impact, right?
Yeah. And I think, too, she's amazing at working with the artists and understanding artists. And I think, you know, it came back to that where I started in the talent agency of understanding how artists work. And she has a real interest in, you know, understanding the artist behind the music and behind the stories and all those kind of things. And, yeah, she really loves music that tells a story. And I think that's, you know, why I'm drawn to it as well, because I love that side as well.
Mm. How do you dig into the heart and mind of an artist?
I'm always just want to hear their story, you know, and or the stories that they want to tell, you know. I always like a bit of a dark story.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm always drawn to artists that, you know, that do that as well, you know.
Mm-hmm. And then how do you communicate that to the outside world? Because one of the things that I guess is the truth is that most artists aren't great communicators. Like, they might be great creators, but getting that story out to the public and to their fan base is a difficult task for most artists, and so they do need people like Nat Harker.
A champion.
And someone who can tell the story. So how do you do that?
Well, it's finding where they're comfortable.
Right.
You know, some artists, you can get them to do 5 radio interviews in a day back to back.
Yep.
No problem. Right. Just get them out there. Where another artist, you know, they probably need an hour, sit down, cup of coffee, you know, and then maybe do 1 or 2 interviews and give them a break. It's about finding where they work and how to get the very best out of them, you know.
Yeah, wow.
And same with, you know, booking a tour as well. Yeah. You know, some artists can go hard. Other ones you can only, you know, book them on the weekends, you know, and they need a couple of respite days in between.
Yeah, wow.
It's just
and how do you establish that stuff?
You get to know them.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's old-fashioned.
I know. Have a conversation. What do you like? How do you
crazy.
Work?
How crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can usually tell. You get, you know, you can usually tell pretty quick.
Wow. And so the charge when it all goes well, what's that like?
It's the best.
Yeah, right. Is that the feel?
Yeah, room full of people clapping. Right. It's great.
Right.
You know, or I often end up at the, you know, the merch table selling and seeing people run towards the merch table after a show so excited to meet the artist and, you know, that's the best, you know. And seeing the artist happy after a show, it's a thrill, yeah.
Wow, it's incredible. Like on one level, it's a very selfless art, and then on the other, I guess it is rich with reward, and so there's fuel there.
Yeah, you know?
It's a really interesting mix.
Yeah. Well, it's that, you know, the collaborative sense of achievement, you know,
Well, it's funny that you use that word collaborative, because it strikes me that although you probably spend a lot of time alone in front of a computer or with a blank piece of paper in front of you trying to work out what to do, your work is deeply collaborative.
Yeah.
And that goes back to university too, by the sounds of things, and goes back to the way that you're wired.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't work any other way.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Wow. So,
I really struggle when it's not that kind of environment, definitely.
Right. Right. What do you do when it's not that way?
Oh, I get terribly frustrated.
Yeah, right. And so what is it about the collaboration that really gets you going?
I know, it's fast. I love bouncing ideas around and, you know, everything happens with more energy, I feel,
right.
When there's, you know, more cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah,
And everyone's doing what they're best at, you know, and then supporting people that, you know, where you need the help. That's when it's fun.
Hey, also, there was something else that came through in the info that you sent me that I got interested in. That was Unsync.
Oh, U-Sync. Oh,
it's U-Sync, is it?
Old school, yeah.
So explain that to someone listening, just so that we can get to the next bit, I guess, which is what that kind of became.
So I was doing a bit of tour managing for a band that I was working with, and I'd moved back to Queensland after living in Sydney and maybe partying a little bit too hard, and ran back home with my tail between my legs, and then a guy I used to work with this band said, look, we've got this crazy idea. And I was like, I love a good crazy idea. Let's do it. And it was a startup company, and it was MySpace was kicking around, and there was no kind of artist management platform. There was no MailChimp. There was no system for a independent artist to use.
Mm-hmm.
Labels maybe had some systems through their own mail-out systems and online stores and things like that. So basically it was a platform for artists to be able to sell their digital music, sell their physical merchandise, email their fans in an affordable platform.
Wow. So was that sort of a subscription model?
Yeah, but also, so they were backstage members was our idea.
Ah.
And, yeah, so, and people could either pay a subscription or they just, you know, what you would consider now, you know, on your mailing list. And it was a system that was accessible for independent artists. So we went well. I think we went for about 2 years. We were in development stages and we got some great artists on board. Great band, Fourth Floor Collapse. I heard them again the other day. I was like, they're brilliant.
Where are they from?
They were a Melbourne band.
What are they called? Fourth Floor?
Fourth Floor Collapse.
Oh, never heard of them.
Brilliant. If you like Augie March kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Kate Miller-Heidke. Who do we have? Amy Meredith. Oh, bunch of other ones.
Yeah. Well.
Anyway, probably the most exciting one was Radiohead. Just before they released Rainbows, they were trying to come up with a platform to release their music.
Wow.
And we were so close. We almost got them.
Wow.
And it fell through. And then, unfortunately, the startup spiraled and it crashed.
Wow.
I don't know. It was a very sad story. There are a lot of investors in it.
And I don't know much about startups. I just assume there's someone with some coin who looks for people with good ideas.
Yeah. And look, it was great. And we also started a festival up in Port Macquarie out of it as well, Festival of the Sun, that's still going now. Mm. It was brilliant. But unfortunately, I like to say we were a little before our time.
Yeah,
because
it
is
like
essentially it. Patreon. You know,
yeah, that's
It's what it is, and we just weren't quite there, and unfortunately, but it meant that all those bands and artists that I'd had contact with, I then, you know, started working with them directly,
right,
helping them skin MySpaces. That's how I started.
Right. Now, am I right in thinking that the next thing that Radiohead did within Rainbows was the Pay Anything You Want, or was that earlier than that?
I think that's
the pay what
it
you
yeah.
want concept.
Yeah.
That's a bit, that changed the state of things, didn't
it?
Yeah,
would have been exciting to be part of, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it? wow, so, and how far did the model go? Did the model go down the line that Patreon is that we know now?
Oh, no, it died.
Right.
But would
the outcome have been something that looks like
I think so, yeah. Unfortunately, it went into administration and the administrators, somebody bought it, I think. I mean, it's all so vague now. And the code just sat there. And it was so frustrating for me because I'd learnt this platform and I couldn't have access to it, you know. And that code just sat there and then just disappeared. It's on some hard drive somewhere.
Can you explain to a listener what Patreon is now, because they probably don't know, but a few of the artists that I've interviewed do use that and are beginning to not rely on it, but certainly it's augmenting their income.
Yeah.
Can you explain simply to someone listening what that model is and how you think was kind of heading in that direction?
So how we were talking before about putting a value on people's creativity, that's what Patreon does, is that it lets an audience member say to an artist, I value you and I want to pay you X amount of dollars a month committed for you to be an artist.
Mm.
And the artist in return says, I will offer you XYZ for supporting me.
Mm.
But it's up to the artist and the audience member to decide that value. And it could be, you know, just letting them into the creative process and what happens, or it could be, you know, early release of music and things like that. But the audience member pays a monthly fee and they commit to the artist, which I think it's beautiful, you know.
Well, it's the patron concept, isn't it,
of
eons before, you know.
Yeah, but you only need small amounts, you know, as opposed to counting on being someone's muse or something, you know, and them giving you heaps of cash. And I think that's what YouSync was about trying to get, you know, $10 a month off 100 people,
yes,
as opposed to trying to get $1,000 off one person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So how does Patreon and even YouSync, how does that compare to, say, crowdfunding, which a lot of listeners might be more familiar with, I reckon?
I think, I mean, mechanics-wise, it's pretty much the same.
Mm.
But I think the philosophy behind it is that crowdfunding, you're funding a album or a film or a product or something, whereas Patreon, I feel like you're just saying to the artist, you just be you. Mm. I don't expect an album. I don't expect you to deliver something.
Yeah.
I just want you to do well.
Right.
You know.
And so then when you watch artists taking on Patreon, do they offer too much of themselves to get that relationship with an audience member, or are people using the platform well?
It comes down to the artist.
Right.
You know, some artists want to share with you what they had for breakfast,
yeah,
through to why they can't go to sleep at night.
Yeah.
Other artists only want to share the artist side of them, you know. So that's what a platform like that does.
Mm.
It gives them the choice of how much you share. And it comes down to, yeah, who the artist is.
Mm. And is it largely successful? Are people starting to really see the benefit of that model?
I think so. And I think it puts the power in the artist's hand, you know, and that's what we've seen over the last 15 years, is that the artists being in control of their audience and how they communicate with them. You know, 15 years ago, that wasn't possible for an artist. Before MySpace, the only way to communicate with an audience en masse was to get a record deal.
Yeah.
That was the only way.
Yeah.
Or through zines.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, for so long there was a gatekeeper.
Mm.
And all these mediums that come out just keep empowering the artist over and over again.
And so then out of that is born your business.
Yeah.
You as an entity.
Yeah, which was just a survival thing, how it started. Because when YouSync ended, it was at Christmas time and I had no qualifications. You know, I had an arts degree and I hung out with a band for a bit and I could code a bit. You know, I have no
tangible qualifications. Yeah. I think you're selling yourself a bit short.
But, you know, at Christmas, I couldn't go for... Yeah, there was nothing I could really go for. So I just started working with a band called Blue King Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And then from Blue King Brown came John Butler. And then from John Butler came Claire Bowditch. And, yeah, it just rolled. And I had a great time for a while there. You know, I worked really, really hard. And like with Gaynor, I just worked with artists that I was passionate about that made me want to get out of bed in the morning and sit at my computer for 12 hours.
Yeah.
You know, and then by that time Facebook had come along and, you know, that was a game changer for everyone. And, yeah, it kind of exploded and I worked my ass off.
I can see maybe because of your computer background that those new platforms as they emerged were something that you could get your head around pretty quickly.
Yeah,
and work out what was going on.
Yeah.
And that must have been an incredible benefit to the artist that you're working for because, geez, trying to work out how that stuff works and how you best reach an audience. And
yeah, and because I'm working with independent artists, they didn't have, the record label behind them to handle that stuff. So, and because over all that time, you know, I'd been learning how to work with artists and how to talk with them and how to get what they want. You know, and I think that was my point of difference with people too.
Of course, yeah.
I wasn't a total nerd. I sort of understood the creative process, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was an asset.
And you were at ease chatting to people about what they wanted and how to achieve it.
Yeah. And maybe for too long at times, maybe too much chatting.
And so was it just difficult getting the numbers and, you know, a number of artists and then all of that work? Is that what burnt you out a little bit? Or
yeah, I think so.
What's the balance?
I should have charged more money.
Oh, okay.
I didn't value myself. Me okay. always telling people to value what they do, that I probably didn't value myself enough.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
And, yeah, I burnt myself out. Did and you? I was probably, you know, what came with the rock and roll lifestyle too, you know, probably was drinking and partying too much and just burnt myself out a bit and yeah. and went and walked dogs for a while.
Right.
I kept working on Blues Fest because I could do that remotely.
What did that entail?
So I've worked in the PR with Gaynor Crawford. She's been the publicist for Blues Fest for almost 20 years.
Oh, okay.
So I worked with her on doing all the on-site media mainly. I help her a little bit in the lead-in PR, but otherwise I help manage all the media on-site and photographers and, yeah, which is a bit of a beast. Really?
Mm. So what does that put you in a tent on the day as well?
And yeah, yeah.
With a clipboard?
Oh, I love a good clipboard.
You have a walkie-talkie?
No.
Oh.
We don't need walkie-talkies.
Why not?
Because, you know, we're the media department. We just do face-to-face.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. And then, like, so I'm seeing you managing hundreds of people.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. We would have almost 400 media reps on
yeah,
site.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause
I'm seeing that start very early in the morning and finish very late.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a drive. Like,
yeah.
And I did it for, unfortunately, I didn't get to do it this year because there was no Blues Fest.
Mm.
But year before last, I did it with a almost 1 year old. And the year before that, I did it 7 months pregnant.
Jeez.
So if you thought it was a stretch the years before, yeah, but I'm so proud that I got to do that.
Yeah.
And I love it. You know, I love working on festivals.
Right.
It's a rush, you know,
yeah.
And I love pushing hard like that.
Yeah.
But I'm certainly starting to see that I can't push myself like that as much anymore.
Yeah. You
know? It takes a lot of stamina.
The sheer physicality of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's a super draining. And, you know, people that work on Splendor, Falls, Woodford, you will find at festivals like that people that have worked on it for 20 plus years. Like
yeah.
these people just do it year after year and they are amazing.
Yeah. Good people?
Good people. Yeah. You don't survive if you're not a good person.
No, that's probably very true, isn't it? Yeah. What sort of person do you see? Like, are they all very similar type of person?
Well, I think the survivors are music lovers.
Of course. I mean, yeah. Because that's got to be at the core, hasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're pushing yourself.
But do you think
probably harder than your pay grade, you know?
Yeah, well, probably harder than the musicians.
Yeah, they get treated like royalty.
Well, in comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think most of those people would see themselves as creative? I mean, I think they are, but
yeah.
I'm just wondering if they see.
I think so. I think they do. I think people from the outside maybe don't.
No, of course.
You know,
yeah.
And I probably even questioned myself, you speaking to me, I'm like, well, am I creative? Am I doing creative? You know, because I'm not actually performing, or am I just an IT person who likes music? You know, it can be like this internal fight. But I think all those people working on site of a festival, they have to be creative thinkers. You have to think
yeah.
on your feet.
Yeah.
You have to think fast. You have to come up with great ideas, you know.
Yeah. Oh, look, I enjoy doing the podcast, and I wasn't thinking that you weren't creative. I think that pure maths is probably creative, you know. It's all about the thinking and the doing and the... So I think you're a creative thinker.
Yeah,
I don't think you need to justify it.
I think...
If nothing else, right?
Yeah, I think it's that drive.
There's heaps of other stuff.
Yeah, I think it's that drive that's, you know, that creative fire of...
Yeah.
You have to do something. You have to explore it. You have to keep pushing through that 8-hour shift on site, you know,
yeah.
that drives you. It's that creative drive. And I don't know if you experience it in other places. I don't know. I don't know
yeah,
anything else.
I know.
You know,
funny,
I don't
it?
Know anything else. This
yeah.
is just who I am. And I've tried a few times to not be creative.
Yeah.
I keep yeah. convincing myself to not work in the arts.
Right.
And then something comes and jumps up and goes, hey! And I go, oh.
We could use your skill set.
And I just keep jumping on and I can't stop.
Mm. So what is creativity?
For me personally, it's my fire.
Yeah,
you know, for what I experience, creativity is storytelling for me.
Mm.
People getting out what's in their head and sharing it. And I think it's beauty too, you know. It's beautiful to watch humans create.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And so what's next?
What's next?
I mean, I know you've just done Arts in the Valley here.
Yeah, yeah. So I moved to Kangaroo Valley and got involved with the visual arts and sculpture down here. I don't know what's next. I'm sure I'll come up with some crazy idea.
What's it like working with visual artists compared to musicians?
I don't have a lot of experience working with visual artists, I have to say. So that's something new and exciting. The work that I've been doing for Arts in the Valley is very admin-focused currently.
Yeah.
It's only my first 12 months.
Mm.
So, and they've been established for 13 years now. So.
Yes, it strikes me it's a rolling, changing animal though.
Yeah, and I think at their upcoming AGM, they're hoping to change the constitution that would perhaps broaden the... arts that they can work with. So that's what I'm excited about.
Yeah. I know other creative friends in the Valley have spoken about a fringe on the side of the arts festival as well.
Mm.
Just saying.
I love a good fringe.
I bet you do. I think the parties are better there too, aren't they? thank you very, very much for letting me into your world and having a chat about it. I think it's a very exciting world. I think it's utterly creative. I don't think you need to worry about that.
Oh, that's very kind.
Yeah. I hope you have a good day.
I will.
All right. Thanks, Nat.
Bye.
Well, you've been listening to Getting It Down, conversations about creativity. I hope you enjoyed what you heard, and please tell your friends about it. That'd be lovely. Remember to subscribe and join us for the next exciting episode.